This episode is made possible by purchasing resources through the Creation Science for Kids store.
Welcome to the Creation Science
for Kids
show. Today, we're going to learn about wandering stars, or from the Greek, the planets. Some of these we've been studying for millennia. Others we're finally coming to understand just recently. Then we're going to share some experiments we've done. A while back, I got those fossil kits from Cornerstone Educational Supply. Today, we also figured out how to use their geology testing kit. Plus, we've started a new science book by Dr. Jay Weil, and we'll share about shadows, math, and time. Praise the Lord. I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart, in the company of the upright, in the congregation. Great are the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. Full of splendor and majesty is his work, and his righteousness endures forever. He has caused his wondrous works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and merciful. Psalm 111, 1-4. This is episode 18 of the podcast where we learn about Jesus, our creator, and his amazing world. Hi, I'm Sherry Fields, your host, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Joseph.
Hello.
And Charity.
Hi.
It's a great episode and I can't wait to get started. But first, I'd like to thank someone for leaving us a 5-star review. It was a thrill to see a positive review by a person with an iTunes account called Porkins Go Boom. They said, "We are really enjoying this podcast. It's excellent to hear both praise and science together. Please make more." As you may have noticed, life hasn't been making it easy for us to keep up with our regular schedule. This bit of encouragement really helps me remember it's worth the hassle to make more episodes. So thanks. If you'd like to give us a bit of encouragement as well, just stop by the show notes, creationscience4kids.com/planets, to get to our iTunes and Stitcher pages. Today, we're going to back up just a bit and read why God said he was going to make all the heavenly objects. Joseph, would you read Genesis 1:14 for us, please?
"And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years."
Thank you. So far, we've learned about celestial bodies that are easy to see fit into this purpose. What gives us days?
Sun and moon.
Well, the sun gives us our days. What does the moon give us?
Seasons.
Yeah, it helps with the seasons.
And
what else?
Days.
And something else that's not mentioned in the verse, do you know?
The which? Months.
The months. Because months are actually named after the moon. You've got M-O-N in it. That's from moon. So just like you'll hear about the American Indians saying it's been 3 moons since, we actually say the same thing. Just our month has changed sound enough that we don't realize we're saying it's the 9th moon and stuff like that. So, okay, so the sun and moon are pretty obvious. The sun also gives us our year when we figure out how long it's been so that it should be spring again by the sun. The stars also help us a lot. What do they help us know?
The seasons.
The seasons. How do they help with that?
You've got different stars in the sky
right.
in the summer than you do in the winter.
Right, because we go around the sun. So some stars, even though they keep shining, they're shining for us during our daylight hours so we cannot see them. And when we get around the sun so that we can see them at night, then we know a new season is coming. What about signs? All the things that we've talked about so far, the sun, the moon, and the stars, we do have eclipses, and God can use those as signs, but most of these are pretty regular. Now, unfortunately, when I was researching this, most of the things that I saw where I was talking about signs for the planets was talking about astrology, because a lot of people think you can figure out what your future is based on how the planets are lining up and making triangles and crazy shapes like that, which is not at all what God wanted us to do. But he has the ability to also use the planets to mark when something's going to happen. What do we know happened, even though we're not sure whether it had anything to do with planets, that told people that a sign had come and it was time to do something?
A star came.
A star came, and what story was that? What
was happening? When Jesus was born.
When Jesus was born, something bright, and it's called a star, but it could move across the sky and stand above his house, shone for the wise men. We do not know whether it was a miraculous body. Some people say it's planets. I really don't know. I like to think it was an angel. But something told those wise men, it's time to go hunting for the newborn king of the Jews. Anyway, we're going to study about the planets that don't fit in quite so neatly in this verse, and yet we know God made them. Here's another verse about the planets that you would never normally guess from reading it. It's the shortest book in the New Testament, the book of Jude, verse 13. Charity, would you read it for us?
Raging waves of the sea, foaming out their own shame, wandering stars, to whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever.
Okay, now here James is talking about false teachers in the church, that they are destructive like raging waves of the sea, and they're doing sinful stuff that gets foamed up to the surface. But then he also calls them wandering stars. I remember thinking, what in the world is he talking about? Stars don't wander. But then I learned some interesting things. I found a page from the University of Tennessee where they're talking about the classifications in astronomy, and they say the term planet originally meant wanderer. It was observed long ago that certain points of light wandered, changed their position with respect to the background stars in the sky. So instead of staying in a constellation, these bright objects would move. In ancient times, before the invention of our modern telescope, and before one understood the present structure of the solar system, there were thought to be seven such wanderers, or planets. Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, the Moon, and the Sun. They put the Sun in the same because they thought the Sun wandered around the Earth, just like Mercury does. They did not understand. NASA has a little more. It says the Greek word was planetes, which means wanderer. And I looked up in the biblical text, and it used planetia, which is the plural form. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
Let's go back to where the Greeks had the moon and the sun in their list of the planets or wanderers. At least by the time of the Greeks, where we were writing it down, people did not understand how the solar system actually worked. It wasn't until the time of Galileo that he figured out what we now know to be true, where the sun is at the center, everything goes around it. The moon does go around the earth, but nothing else is orbiting around the earth. The ancients had assumed, or the Greeks anyway, had assumed that everything orbited the earth, and the earth was stayed still and was stationary. If you told somebody who'd never studied any science that if you're at the equator, you're going around at 1,000 miles an hour, they would just laugh at you. Such a speed is crazy when you're holding still and it's not even windy. So it took a lot of work for us to realize, and there was a lot of resistance because there had been other ideas, and they even worked pretty well. That's where science has to be willing to relook at whatever it has decided is true. God's word never claimed that everything spun around the earth. All right, let's have a look at the planets. I found a couple of pages for kids that list them. Okay, now you were just mentioning, guys, that you know a mnemonic device for remembering and keeping in order the names of the planets. What was it that you had learned? Joseph, you want to go first?
I'm a very eager mother just served us noodles.
Okay, that's cool. And Charity, you had one that was slightly different.
My very eager mother jumped straight up now.
Jump straight up. I don't know. I'd rather serve noodles. All right. What does it stand for? What is that helping us remember?
Mercury, Venus, Earth, Jupiter.
Wait, in order. Earth.
Mercury, Venus. Mars, Jupiter. Saturn, Uranus, Neptune.
Yeah. And Pluto is sometimes put on because for a while, quite a while after we discovered it, it was put on the list of planets. Now it's been put in the category of?
Dwarf
planet. So it's still like on this page, they've included Pluto, partly because it's so cool. And there are several other dwarf planets. Okay. The one closest to the sun is?
Mercury.
And what do you know about Mercury?
And it's so hot.
It's a rocky planet. It's pretty small. It is very hot.
Bigger than the moon. Bigger than...
It's bigger than the moon? Okay. Here's what this website, KidZone, says. Its day is 59 days long, Earth days long, but only 88 days to circle the sun. So a year. That means that there are fewer than 2 days in a year. That's why it gets so hot on the sunny side. Can get blistering hot.
2 days in a year? Wow.
Their best guess is that the inside of Mercury is full of iron. Then the next planet is?
Venus.
Venus is the brightest planet in our sky and can often be seen without having to use binoculars or anything. It's called the naked eye, if you know where to look. A lot of times we'll see it in the evening near the moon or something. It's very bright. Part of why it's bright is it's covered with yellow clouds of sulfuric acid that reflect the sun's light. So
it's like a big yellow mirror.
Yeah. So we've seen like the picture of the moon from a million miles away. What color is it really?
Gray.
Gray. Yeah. It's kind of like asphalt that's been, or a road surface that's been there for a year or more. It's very dark, which is a good thing because if it was way brighter, we wouldn't be able to sleep at night. But Venus is so far away that it having these yellow bright clouds that reflect lots of light, it still just looks like a bright star and doesn't stop us from sleeping. Okay, then we have our own Earth, which we study all the time. Now we know, just like Job said, it is hung on nothing and is going around in space and is one of the planets wandering around our sun. The next planet is?
Mars.
Okay, and what it says is cool about Mars. We liked studying it. We've got a space rover wandering around on it, collecting rocks and taking pictures right now. But it has Olympus Mons, the largest volcano we've found so far in the solar system. It's 27 kilometers high, and they don't give it to us in English. This must be from another country. With a crater at the top that's 81 kilometers wide. Well, we know that's pretty huge. Okay, between Mars and Jupiter is another dwarf planet, like Pluto, known as Ceres. C-E-R-E-S, Ceres. It was discovered just over 200 years ago in 1801. It's the smallest planet, dwarf planet we've discovered so far, and the only one is actually in the asteroid belt. But it's round. You can see a fuzzy picture we've taken of it. It's large enough to be pulled into a sphere shape, so that's why it's a dwarf planet. Then we get to another type of planet. What's the next planet called?
A gas Jupiter.
Planet. Jupiter, and it's a gas planet. Gas planets are far larger. Every other planet in the solar system could fit inside of Jupiter with space left over. But it swirls with gas. Jupiter has one of my favorite space objects. It's called the Storm or the Red Spot. And we've been watching it for over 150 years. And it swirls around. It reminds me of a sparkly shampoo that when you pour it into your hand, it swirls and glistens. Except on Jupiter, it lasts longer and doesn't foam up. And it's got that reddish color. It's just beautiful. There's also an interesting storm right at the top that's in the shape of a pentagon. It's five-sided. Super cool. We can't figure out why it does that. Because it's gas, it also has a very short day. Jupiter spins around in only 9 hours and 55 minutes. So that's super quick for such a huge planet. No wonder it can keep up a huge storm like that for so long. Then the next planet is also a gas one, and it is called?
Saturn.
What's special about Saturn?
It's got rings.
A couple of the other planets have rings, but they're very much harder to see. Saturns are very obvious, and one of the favorite things for people with binoculars or telescopes to watch because it's just beautiful. Something that you might take some time to research on at searchcreation.org is that Saturn's rings can't be nearly as old as the people who want the universe to have made itself have to believe, because things are happening to it that are messing up the rings already. Saturn's rings are as wide as 22 planet Earths all in a row, so that's the diameter, but it's only 30 feet thick. That's amazing. That's super thin. If you had something that a CD or DVD of that size, it would be thinner than a piece of paper. Then there's Uranus. Its axis is tilted at 97 degrees, so it actually spins on its side. So that's kind of cool. Uranus has a set of rings as well. Then the next one is
Neptune.
Neptune, do you know why? And Charity, you know what it's named after.
It's named after the Roman god of the sea.
Of the sea. I've actually used a picture of Neptune to put behind the verse where it talks about God moving across the surface of the waters to picture what Earth would have looked like before he caused the dry land to appear. That's why it looks like it's covered in a huge blue sea. Neptune was discovered in 1846. In 2011, it finally made its first lap around the sun since we discovered it, because one Neptune year lasts 165 Earth years.
Wow. That's long.
Like Jupiter, Neptune has a dark spot caused by a storm. Neptune's spot is smaller than Jupiter's. It's only about the size of the planet Earth.
Much smaller.
If we could live on Neptune, we'd
okay.
Last 1 year.
Now, I thought it was cool, this website page we're looking at Kids Zone. It does include Pluto, and they even already have a picture up that we just took from our NASA New Horizons space probe back in July, on July 14th of 2015. We were all excited because we were finally going to get to see it, and it's actually really fascinating what we're learning about Pluto, because besides just being cool to not have to guess and have artists say, oh, I think it'll be like this and I think it'll be like that, now we have a picture. Yeah, what's that? What does this?
It's like a heart.
Yes. A lot of people think this huge white space near the lower part of the picture looks like a heart. And I ran into a new article at Creation Evolution Headlines, which is awesome, especially for you parents and older kids to study, because he takes us through what the secular scientists are saying and then adds what we really know. We just have a new picture that was released September 24th. Of 2015. It says Pluto's snakeskin terrain. So this is the surface of the planet, and right near the twilight where it's turning to dark, people love to study the moon at this same point because it's much easier to see the mountains and the heights because the shadows get really long and clear. So this is at that same point in Pluto that New Horizons took a picture of and finally got it back to us. And the scientists are shocked. Let's see what they said. It's a unique and perplexing landscape, so it confuses them. This will really take time to figure out, said somebody from the Washington University in St. Louis. They're very surprised, partly because we know Pluto is only 38 degrees above absolute zero. That's minus 235 degrees Celsius. It's super cold, and yet it has all these nitrogen glaciers, it's got methane, and it's got all this interesting stuff with the mountains. How is that happening? It seems to be much more active than our moon does. So they're trying to figure out how that could happen. Here's another quote from somebody at the University of Sydney. And this is truly astounding. And he says, the surface features are signs of a geologically young Pluto, as Pluto is constantly changing. Why isn't Pluto as dead as the moon, which is just as old? So one of the things that I really liked is the scientists are confused, and here's what David Coppish says about it when he's starting his little comments at the end. Why must Pluto be old? Youth is staring these scientists in the face, and they not only refuse to consider it, that option is completely absent from their mental categories. For us, where we believe God made the whole universe not very long ago, we are just as excited and thrilled to see this fascinating landscape of our furthest dwarf planet. But we aren't as confused and perplexed and wondering how could this be. We know God can do whatever he wants. He can have a planet spinning on his side. He can have a planet spinning backwards. He can make something look young. He can have something look old because he doesn't need the moon to be very active. We don't want it spewing out lava at us. That would be very dangerous. He can do what he wants. It doesn't confuse us the way it confuses these other scientists. All right, we could go on. There are so many more things with the moons, like Io is one of my favorite moons where it's got all kinds of volcanoes and geysers and is way more active than people who want to believe that it's millions of years old can understand. But we spend hours getting into all that. So let's close up our planet section with a couple of jokes that I found. First, why wouldn't you want to give Saturn a bath?
Because it might lose its rings.
That's a good one. Do you know what else people worry about when they take a bath and they're dirty or something? What happens to the bathtub?
It's dirty.
And it leaves a ring around the tub. So Saturn would be sure to leave a ring around the tub. And what kind of songs do planets sing?
I don't know.
Neptunes. Okay, today we're going to do our experiments and what we've been doing all together since it was as much for me as it was for you guys. First, we'll start with the geology testing kit that I received from Cornerstone Educational Supply. Thank you very much. And by the way, you'll want to check them out. They are young earth creationists wanting to get kids interested in geology and recognizing the flood and who caused it and who made the rocks. Jesus, our creator. I found the directions for how to use the different tiles and piece of glass and the nail, and they even had a little penny in the kit. It's like, what are all these for? And so it explained these are to test hardness and to see if bits of the rock will rub off, which is called streaking. And I also was able to go out and get a few rocks from just down the street. What were some of the interesting things that we found when we were testing these rocks?
Some of them were so hard. They barely scratch.
Yes, you, Charity, you like testing them for hardness. We didn't have anything really hard. I thought I'd gotten some granite. But what did you use to scratch it that worked?
The nail.
Now, some of the rocks were so soft, what else could we use to scratch it that didn't come with the kit? Our fingernail. There was one rock that wanted to crumble to fine dust. It was a warm orangish brown. And yeah, it was so soft you could scratch it with your fingernail. And that rock was also perfect for doing what with those tiles?
Painting pictures?
Well, you could, but using it just like you can rub chalk on the sidewalk and draw pictures, those tiles, you could rub a streak and get that nice orange streak. Now, one of the rocks we didn't realize had a lot of the same minerals in it. Why not?
Because it was a different color, brownish, and the others were reddish.
Right. The small pieces that I knew were this soft, crumbly rock were an orangish yellow, but this one was pretty dark brown. But when we rubbed it across the streaking stone, it had exactly the same color minerals. Now, we also tried some vinegar to see if any of them were acidic. Nothing wanted to bubble up on us, even the limestone that I had gotten, because one of the things here in Michigan, we've got plenty of marine fossils that got buried in limestone, but nothing wanted to cooperate for us. So it was a lot of fun and gets you hands-on trying out the different rocks. Then we also started a new science book called Science in the Ancient World by Dr. Jay Weil, who's one of my favorite creation scientists because he does great things for adults, but he also loves to write materials for children and for high schoolers. I know we'll be using his chemistry and things when we get up to high school ourselves. And Science in the Ancient World just sounded really cool to me. So we picked it up this spring and just started it. And the first project was
to see how big a tree is.
To measure a shadow or a tree, just like
the
a guy from ancient Greece,
Thales,
who was born about 625 years before Jesus. So how did we do it? When I told you we were going to find out how tall the telephone pole at the end of the block was, what did you think I was going to do to find out how tall it was?
Take a ruler and just stack it up.
Yeah, which would be quite a job to get a ruler to not fall over that high. Plus, our measuring tape only reaches 25 feet, and the telephone pole was quite a bit longer than that. So what did we do first?
We measured how tall a 1 foot ruler was.
Right, to see how long.
To see how long 1 foot actually was in the shadow.
The shadow. We already knew the ruler itself was 12 inches long, but we wanted to find out how long the shadow was. And if you remember right, I kept watching. What was I watching for before we went out to do our experiment?
To see when the shadow that we were measuring was aligned where we could.
Straight north, right, because that way it wasn't blocked by the tree or our house and was going straight up the sidewalk. So we've measured how long the ruler's shadow was, and then
We measured the shadow of the telephone pole.
The telephone pole. Uh-huh. And then we did some math. The shadow of the ruler was 11 inches, and the shadow of the telephone pole was, wait a minute.
49 feet. 5 inches.
Right, so almost 50 feet long. And when we did the math, how long did we figure the telephone pole was?
60 feet.
Now, we know that wasn't quite accurate because the sidebars on the telephone pole were adding a little to the shadow, and that we couldn't tell where one stopped and the other began. But still, it's pretty close to 60 feet tall, so we're glad we didn't have to have a ruler holding it straight up 60 feet in the air with trying not to get it to fall and clunk anybody. So how to figure that out based on the shadow's length was discovered over 2,500 years ago by a guy named Thales. So we'll be doing lots more experiments to see how people in ancient Greece, especially because they not only did the experiments, they wrote it down and people remembered them. And we're looking very much forward to having a fun year studying Dr. Weil's science in the ancient world. Remember, you can find links to all the great stuff we've talked about today by visiting the show notes page, creationsciencethenumber4kids.com/planets. Are you homeschooling? I found an exciting affiliate partner at schoolhouseteachers.com. They are a division of The Old Schoolhouse magazine and stand firmly for our Creator God. They have online courses on all kinds of subjects for all levels, from kindergarten through high school. Their science programs look fascinating and could be a big help for parents who feel overwhelmed by such a complex subject. Just go to creationscienceforkids.com/store to check it out. Thanks! Do you like science? Got a subject you want to talk about? Or maybe you like telling stories? If you send me a report, story, joke, or interesting idea, I might use it in a future show. Head over to creationsciencethenumber4kids.com/podcast to contact me. This finishes up our show for today. Until next time, have fun treasuring our amazing universe and creator. Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. Revelation 4:11.